CliffCentral.com. Are you having a good day today? Are you having a happy time? Are you up and about and taking on the day with, what is the word, volition? Excitement and vigor. Yeah, vigor. Vigor's good. You're vigorously taking on your Tuesday.
Do you think Imagine Dragon will ever create a song for Game of Thrones?
Don't know, but that's a nice thing to think about.
Like, sometimes people just miss the obvious things in life.
Yeah, I mean, they should really be. They should be writing the theme song. Venetia has messaged us this morning to say, morning, I started listening to the Man to Man podcast, and I want to congratulate the guys on a great show. I can relate to the part about men not wanting to ask for directions and women doing better in the challenges, as discussed in the first episode. My four-year-old daughter started doing soccer this year, and the feedback from her coach is that she listens. It gives her a head start against the boys. At this point, she is the only girl doing soccer. Anyway, I thought I'd share that. Have a great day. Men don't like asking for directions, and they don't listen as well. That's one of the things they discuss. It's going to be fun to talk to Craig Wilkinson. He's one of the hosts of Man to Man, which we've spoken about once or twice here on this show. And if you haven't downloaded it and listened to it yet, you are missing out. It's really very good.
Yeah.
All right. You want some interesting stuff that's going on that you need to know about today?
Yes, Gareth.
Yes.
All right. I'm glad that you're excited about this.
Can we look at some of the news stories? Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, first things first, today could be the day smoking weed in your house becomes legal.
In South Africa?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, today, the Constitutional Court will decide whether you can smoke a joint at dacha in your home. They, of course, could choose not to, and it could wait for the full lengthy court case in the High Court in Pretoria with a so-called dacha couple who we've had on the show before. That's Jules Stubbs and Myrtle Clark, have asked the court to strike down every law banning the use, sale, and cultivation of marijuana. In March last year, Western Cape Judge Dennis Davies found the ban on using marijuana at home breached the constitutional right to privacy. Woohoo! I'm saying this as someone who does not smoke weed. I am a big fan of the right to privacy. I love when it trumps the other bullshit. And when you get the government out of your house. He did not legalize the sale of dacha or the transporting of dacha to a private home. But Rastafarian Gareth Prince and former dacha party leader Jeremy Acton brought the case to ask for the home use of marijuana to be allowed. The pair represented themselves without lawyers, and now the Constitutional Court has to agree with or strike down that decision.
Just on that, I need to smoke a joint in the studio because the All Blacks lost to the box.
Oh, do you? Is that the
Sprinkles brought it up yesterday.
Oh, right, okay.
So I need to smoke, because this needs to actually happen, so then I can smoke a joint and then do the sport.
Could be a really good week to do that, Ben.
Now,
you won't be breaking any laws.
Fitting, yeah.
Technically, because you spend a lot of time here, this could count as your second home, and if this
That's
works...
Where I start my day every day, yeah. Okay. Technically speaking, I start my day here.
So it would be legal.
All the evidence about dacha will be ventilated, said Clark. That's the woman in the dacha couple, Myrtle Clark.
Ventilated.
Yeah, in the Western Cape court matter, advocate Thomas Borgaba, acting for the state, argued smoking dacha increased crime, affected the poor and vulnerable, caused mental illness and psychosis.
Sorry, sweetheart, that's a poor economy you're talking about.
It's a poor economy and the government.
Yeah, that's what causes those things.
Yeah. Okay. Also argued it was a gateway drug inducing communities to much harder and more addictive drugs like tick.
So buying weed would still not be legal.
Yeah, but you can smoke it in your own house. So God knows how you get it.
That's the thing.
The court turns a blind eye to that. That's what you call, justice.
Can you grow it?
I suppose you could, as long as it was in small amounts and you weren't selling it.
Well, yeah, and under the condition of privacy. This is the whole thing that they're talking about, privacy in your own home.
I don't know. I suppose we'll find out today. The highest court in the land, the Constitutional Court, will decide, and then that's it.
Done.
Yeah, then we don't have to hear politicians telling us how they care for us, which they don't, telling us how they're going to protect us from evil dacha, when the only thing we should be protected from is evil them.
Yes, I would ban politicians.
Yeah.
Legalize weed, ban politicians.
Right, that should be your... That. You know what, Ben? Restart the dacha party. It sounds like you know what you're talking about. All right, so that's my contribution this morning for all the weed smokers. You could be legally allowed to smoke weed in your house from today.
For a lot of people I know, it's not going to change anything.
No.
They'll carry on as they are.
They've been doing it. They're going to keep on doing it. We've been having it. All right. What do you got for us?
Oh, Burt Reynolds just got cooler in my books from this.
He's dead.
Yes, but he has done something so legendary in my books. I'm just like, he's an icon right now. Yeah. So Burt Reynolds had one son. His name is Quentin. Uh-huh. And right now, with his will coming to play, something just has come out that Quentin will obviously not be happy with. Burt Reynolds has left his niece in charge of taking care of his entire estate and not his son Quentin. And furthermore than that, has left nothing to Quentin.
Wow.
This is a will that was signed back in October of 2011. And what is most impressive about it is that Burt actually gave a justification to this, saying, and I quote, "I intentionally omit him from this, my last will and testament, as I have provided for him during my lifetime."
Ooh. So he's a bit of a loser.
I actually don't even think it's something loserish. You know, Burt probably sat and he said, this Quentin dude has had such a cushy, great life. You know, he has grown up in prime, let's for example just say Beverly Hills, and yeah, he went to great schools and he was able to jet ski every single holiday season.
Right.
And what more does he exactly need? You know, no, that's it. Money can go to my friends, my family. Let my niece get a huge chunk of it. No one else is getting anything.
He is the son of Burt with Lonnie Anderson. And he looks a little bit like Burt and a little bit like Lonnie.
Mm-hmm. So he's Hollywood royalty, things go.
I mean, as you know, as much as you can be.
Mm-hmm.
So Burt's decided he's not getting any inheritance because he got enough during Burt's life. I mean, I do kind of like that.
Isn't that fair?
You know, if you're a parent and you're still paying for your child after they leave the house, 18, let's say up to 25. If you're a parent, because 25 is really giving you some leeway. Let's say you know you're struggling to find a job or you're studying or whatever. Whatever reason, you're still with your parents at 25. I know Ben is thinking this is ridiculous because he was pretty much kicked out of the house at like 11. Mm. But let's imagine 25. Mm. If you're still staying at home with your parents and they're paying for you after the age of 25, that does get kind of embarrassing. And you should be a little bit embarrassed. You're an adult. You should find the means to look after yourself from about that age on.
Yeah.
I don't think that's asking too much. I think it would be a relief to your parents if you got out of the house somewhere around there.
Yeah, and Quentin is 30.
Yeah, I think, Quentin, you gotta make it on your own now, dude. And I presume that this niece that he leaves the money to, she's going to inherit some?
Well, she is, for now, what we currently know, according to page 6, is that she is in charge of the estate. So in being able to say what goes where, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it's the entire Burt Reynolds personal, estate. And she is really hamming her position up and playing the right cards. She said in a statement, "It is with a broken heart that I said goodbye to my uncle. My uncle was not just a movie icon. He was generous." To you, Quentin.
Yeah, I like your laugh. That's pretty evil right there.
This is horrible. Oh. This niece is playing the right cards. Generous to everyone except Quentin. She went on to say, Burt was passionate and a sensitive man who was dedicated to his family, friends, fans, and acting students. So, yeah. But I think this is quite a refreshing take to life and what one person does in their own life and how, look, their children should be able to stand on their own 2 feet.
Well, you know, there are all these billionaires who are not leaving anything to their kids. And they've already told their kids, you know, this Steve Ballmer, who used to be the CEO of Microsoft for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He founded Microsoft with Bill Gates. He's like, I'm not giving my kids anything. They must make it on their own. I'll leave them a house, which is more than most kids get from their parents. And there'll be, I don't know, $10 million, which is more than just about everyone on earth gets from their parents. Mm-hmm. So the rest they're going to have to organize on their own. I'm going to give the rest to charity. We're going to put it into good works. We're going to spend it while we're alive. And that's the right way to go.
Just Bezos last week committed to giving away $2 billion.
Oh, really? Jeff Bezos?
Jeff Bezos.
Oh, well, he's got like $80 billion. Yes, so much. What's $2 billion to him?
It's nothing at all.
But still, really. I mean, you know, I love the way people who like me and you who don't have billions, we're like, oh, you only give away $2 billion. It's not our money. We can't tell other people what to do with it.
But you know, when Jeff Bezos did this whole thing, again, like, no good deed goes unpunished. So he mostly wants to give the money to help homelessness and to uplift preschools in America.
Right.
So people, naturally, they want to find some shit on him. Right. Turns out some people who do work in the Amazon warehouses actually live in tents.
Oh, really?
Property, yeah. So they're saying, this is a bit ironic, Jeff.
People always have to do this.
Because you think you're this massive philanthropist. Meanwhile, working conditions for this company isn't up to scratch.
I wonder what kind of people go through their lives trying to seek this perfection. Don't you realize all human beings are flawed? And if someone's doing something better than you, they're better than you. That's all that matters. Finding dirt on them doesn't make you any better. You're still nothing. You're not Jeff Bezos. You didn't build the world's most successful company out of nothing. He himself was working and living in one room. Amazon's office was his bedroom. He didn't have a whole lot of cash. I didn't see you running up and trying to find something wrong with him then. No, because you thought he was beneath you. Now suddenly he's worth $80 billion and you've got to find dirt on him. Well, even if you do, you're still a loser and he's still winning. And if he helps 500 homeless people, that's more than you'll ever do in your life. Finding dirt on... Well, we found an Amazon warehouse worker who lives in a tent. Congratulations.
See, we never know the full context, but sure. So, look, in life there's winners and losers. Don't quote me on that. That's just how life's always been. But what it comes down to is that this guy has made things more affordable for people. He's created more jobs for people.
He's built something
out of
nothing.
He's built something. He's built something which affects all our lives for the good.
He didn't take from anybody else. He built a legitimate business where people are willing to spend their money to get stuff from Amazon. He's hooked up massive retailers with off-site warehousing, with distribution mechanisms. I mean, the guy is he's a genius. Mm. What are you? Anyway, Mr. Schmangles is back. He says, yay, marijuana being legal in South Africa. That Dacha couple are my heroes. Yeah, man, I'm definitely coming to South Africa to have some Schmangles with Ben. And my mates. We could even move back home because this is my thing. I love it, says Mr. Schmangles. Clearly a very big fan of the weed.
Wow. Okay.
All right. Okay. You want to hear some emails?
Okay. Yeah, see, we need to get to that.
All right. So here, first of all, from Suzette in Durban. She says, I am referring to your podcast pertaining to plastic straws. Remember that discussion we had?
Which topic in particular? Was it Rich Mulholland commenting on
it? Well, it was just about how the plastic straws. I said I don't think it makes a difference. Rich Mulholland says he thinks that it does. Stephen Fry's AI theory with regard to the gods erring when they gave us the fire of the gods. And Sia's comment on robots being racist. So she's tying all of these together. She says, I have a conspiracy theory. The oceans will turn into plastic food to fuel the humans, which in time will be harvested by the bots for the insulation of their wires. Just a thought. Suzette's crackpot crazy. Conspiracy theories aside, I'm a proud Durbanite, and you have been religiously religiously recycling my plastic for at least 6 months. Believe you me, once you pay attention to a worthy cause, you cannot just turn a blind eye. The amount of recyclable plastic us humans consume on a daily, monthly, or yearly basis makes me really grateful that I have no offspring. My message of peace and love is this. Recycle your plastic, you motherfuckers. As always, yours, Suzette from Durban. Yeah, so she's an activist in that respect. Good for you. I like that. I don't think we should be polluting the earth any more than we already are. There's that plastic island we always talk about. It's like a continent now. It's huge. Floating off the Pacific.
People wanting to be citizens of it.
I know. For the last week and a bit, almost every day between 6:50 and 7 a.m., your stream seems to cut out, and often it then rectifies itself and all is well. Now, I have to tell you, yesterday I listened to the whole show. I started listening. When I woke up, I got into the shower and it went onto my shower speaker. I got into the car, it went onto my car speaker. It did not cut out once, all the way here. So I don't know. This is someone who wrote to us yesterday. But here he says, or she says, I'm not sure if maybe Ben is done with the sport around this time and he hits the pawn really hard. So it kills the streaming bandwidth or what, but it seems pretty regular.
What a lovely reflection of me as a person.
I have been off my Wi-Fi at home to make sure it wasn't my wife hitting the pawn hard at that time either. Okay, so it's a man who sent this to us. But isn't that interesting that it could be Ben hitting the pawn really hard, according to this person?
Oh,
wow.
Huh. You like that?
That's amazing.
You don't though, Ben.
No.
No,
I've got other things
so
to do.
So that clears
here.
That up.
I'm actually very busy during the show. That's why I go quiet for so long.
Someone thinks all you do after the sport is hit the pawn really hard.
Yeah, I wish.
People
I
think
wish.
Of you, Ben.
I wish I had such freedom. But this is what's frustrating about what we do here is we bust our balls and other elements to make sure it works. But then you get other networks out there out of our control. Like when the sharks eat the CECOM cable.
Yeah.
It's not us. So, like, you drop a signal because you're driving through a certain part. It's not us. So,
bad neighborhood.
We do our level best, and ultimately everything balances out, I guess.
Well, we can only hope, right?
Yeah.
There it is.
Enough from me. I'm going to go to the pawn.
No, according to him, you hit the pawn hard.
Oh.
Do it right
so
now.
Hard that it kills the streaming pad.
Let's go with midget today.
Have fun.
Midget. All right, what else is going on?
Well, meet Yusaki Maezawa.
Who?
Yusaki Maezawa.
I think he's in this video I'm about to watch.
This is the first person who will be a private tourist flying around the moon.
Oh.
Remember the news last week that SpaceX is finally launching the service for certain people who are interested? Well, Yusaku is the one who wants to do it. And Yusaku, I think you have so much to lose because you are a Japanese billionaire. Oh. But I guess at the same time, you have tons of money lying around and you think this is great for you. Well, Elon Musk and SpaceX announced Yusaku will be the first person to go to space casually. Just as a tourist, and amid a lot of speculation as to who this first passenger will be, Musk said, I'd like to introduce the first paying customer. Before then announcing Yusaku, this was all during a live stream of theirs. They said, finally, I can tell you that I choose to go to the moon. This is what the entrepreneur
is proudly proclaimed. I choose to go to the moon, not because it is easy, but because it is hard.
That's what Robert Kennedy said.
Thank you.
It was him. He said, we chose to go to the moon, not because these things are easy, but because they're hard.
I think this is just such an ego thing. You know, just as a billionaire, he says, it will go down in history. He's the first human to embark on a lunar mission since 1972. That was when the last Apollo mission went down. And only 24 humans ever since have traveled to the rock, 12 of whom walked on its surface. So he describes this experience and SpaceX in particular as a fashion innovator. Would have used different words, but okay. And he also goes on to say they will be globally recognized as great curators. But anyways, he says he chooses to go to the moon in 2023 as a host. And he would like to invite 6 to 8 artists from around the world to join him on this mission to the moon. So I don't know, maybe if you want to join, go ahead, you know, join this 42-year-old who's worth a cool $2.9 billion.
Going to the moon.
Au revoir, my dear.
I'm still just saying, nope, they can go first. Let's see how it goes. Then we'll contemplate tagging along afterwards. But yeah, traveling to the moon, all going down in a couple of years' time.
Would you go if I gave you a free ticket to the moon?
Not in this first trip, no. I'll go on the 8th. Trip.
I wouldn't go at all. I have zero interest in going to the moon. Absolutely none. I don't want to go to Mars. I don't want to go to the moon. You remember we interviewed that woman who wants to go to Mars? She's on the Mars One shortlist or whatever.
Yes.
Remember? I think she's crazy. Who wants to get in a spaceship for, I think it's a couple of months they have to travel there? I can't even remember what the time period is, but she has to go. The whole time your muscles are atrophying, you eating, I don't know, microgreens or cans of crap and pooing into a packet. It's just weird. It's just, the whole thing is just so weird. I wouldn't do it.
Just watching the Matt Damon movie.
Not interested.
Should really kind of like, you know, show things up for you.
Well, as well, what Elon went on to say during the live stream doesn't exactly inspire confidence in my books. Yeah. As much as they were going on and on and on about, you know, they have this BFR launch vehicle and they describe it as the most powerful rocket in history. It's capable of carrying humans to the moon, Mars, and beyond. This is Elon's direct quote. He still goes on to say, there are some chances things could go wrong.
Yeah, of course.
To be clear, this is dangerous. It's not a sure thing.
No. Oh, fuck. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, fuck me gently.
Oh, does this make you want to go? Ah,
no, you don't want to go.
I look past it. Let's all go together.
Please. You know what? Let the billionaires go. They want to break out of this little planet of ours. You go ahead. I'm very happy here. I really am. I don't know if we end up polluting the earth so we have to leave, I'm going to be long gone by then.
Not our problem.
I'm trying my best to keep my little patch of earth healthy and happy. I try not to make a mess, try not to, you know, burn plastic. I try not to put crap into the air that I don't have to, or throw out rubbish into a rubbish dump.
Mm-hmm.
I really do try. I try to keep my stuff together because as long as I'm alive, this is the only Earth I want to be on. If you guys go and colonize Mars, good for you.
Miss us.
I'm proud of you. I think you're doing the best thing for humanity, but I am not going anywhere. You will not be able to pry me loose. If this planet was doomed and there was an asteroid heading towards us, I'd be okay with waiting for the asteroid. I'm not going to Mars. I'm not going to...
Too much effort
some
for
other solar system. No, please, I don't want to go. Or live on a spaceship forever because it's going to take 8 generations of humans to get to the next star. You know, I don't want to know. I'm happy here. Leave me on Earth. I was born on Earth. I've evolved for Earth. I'm not ready for Mars.
Let's see how it goes. They still have 5 years to dot their
I's. See how it goes. I'll be dead by the time they worry about this stuff.
Oh, in 5 years' time, you say they'll be dead?
Hey, they're not going to do it in 5 years. It's going to take much longer.
You reckon?
Well, I don't know. If it takes 5 years, I'll watch.
Yeah, this trip in particular,
get a pair of binoculars and watch.
Is slated for 2023, and it will last a week. They say that the journey will come close as 125 miles. To the moon's surface, and then it will complete a lunar transit and come back to Earth.
So they're not even going to land on it on the moon?
Well,
it's like a cruise ship to nowhere.
Yeah, it's like that one that you do to the Portuguese islands. Except you actually get off, I think, at the Portuguese islands.
But I also think, like, another reason for doing this is that you've got to go through the whole astronaut kind of training thing, like when Mark Shuttleworth did it. It wasn't just about getting into a small can with some Russians. Like you get to feel like you're an astronaut. You get to feel like the whole process. And I think this is what the billionaires really go for.
Well, you have to do the training, and you know, there's a lot you need to know about weightlessness and plenty of stuff. So
I'm sure, like the kind of people you're going to be interacting with are geniuses and just really incredible people. So from that aspect, I would love to go. The actual getting to the moon, secondary.
Oh, but they have money.
That's you're not even landing on the moon. That bothers me.
Think how fascinating the training is and the process of going through this and like the cool clothes that you get. And you get to wear suits and stuff.
Yusaku just spends money. So I love how people just research things like these. He's worth, as I said a little earlier, $2.9 billion. He recently purchased art worth $57 million, shelled out another $13.9 million on another piece of art. He bought something called The Lobster, which was painted by Jeff Koons for $6.9 million. So someone like this who can just casually spend, you know, $6.9 million going to the moon for a week is child's play to him.
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
It's great. Good for him. You go ahead, dude. You're on your own.
Bye-bye.
Au revoir, my dear.
Mm-hmm. Happy days. Let's get Robin in here. Robin is from Lifestyle Home Garden. We're going to talk about my birthday present she gave me the other day, which is a bonsai. Ticky, ticky, ding, ding, dong, dong, dong. That's right. I've got a little bonsai. It's a wild olive. Isn't it pretty, Sia? You saw it. It's gorgeous. It's a lovely looking little tree. Ben, did you see it?
It's very nice, Gareth. I always admire it from afar.
Yes. I've taken it home because we have enough plants around here, beautiful plants that Lifestyle Home Garden have brought to us. And some of them are doing very, very well, but I want my bonsai to be my responsibility. So I've taken it home, and it's looking very healthy and happy, Robin.
Oh, good, Gareth. I'm so happy about that.
I would be horrified and embarrassed. I will send you weekly photographs to prove it.
Yes, thank you.
I would be so embarrassed if I hadn't been able to keep the thing for more than 2 weeks alive. So it's doing very well. You told me water twice a week?
So, Gareth, the thing with bonsais, and that's what we're obviously going to talk about today, just a few tips to caring for a bonsai at home.
All right.
Is that because a bonsai is generally in a very shallow pot and a smaller pot than you would traditionally put other indoor plants, it actually needs a lot of water.
Okay.
So ideally you should water it every single day.
Oh.
Yes. But it also depends on the variety that you have. So yours is a wild olive, if I'm correct,
that's
and remember
correct.
What we brought. So The key to having success with bonsais is do a bit of research on the type of tree that you have. How does it exist naturally in the wild?
Uh-huh.
And then look at the water requirements, the light requirements there, what type of environment does it thrive in, and try to replicate that as much in your care at home. But because of the small size, like I just said, and the shallow pot, it will need more water. It will need quite a lot of light. So a lot of morning sunlight,
yes.
Preferably outdoors.
Oh, okay. Well, I've got mine inside.
Yes. So but for yours, that will work.
It's at a window.
Correct. Yo, Gareth, you don't even need me. You know exactly what you're doing.
I don't want this thing to die. I'm going to look after it like gold.
Good.
No, a bonsai it's an art form.
That's correct. It's a Japanese art form, and it really is something that you can put your heart and soul into. It can become your own work of art. That's the beauty about bonsais, is that you're essentially replicating what nature creates in the wild, but in a miniature form, and it's just wonderful what you can achieve. So, like I said, do a bit of research on the tree that you have, the tree, and then try and replicate those conditions. Also, like you said, Gareth, yours is inside. Some varieties can survive inside, but then they must be by a window so that they also receive morning light and somewhere where you can open the window so that they can occasionally get fresh air.
Okay.
So that is very important. But if you want to keep it outdoors, similar conditions apply. Morning sunlight, try avoid harsh afternoon or midday sunlight if you can. Dappled shade of a tree can work too, but try get morning sun. That's really where most bonsais will thrive. And then regular watering.
All right, so let's go back to the idiot's guide here for people who have no idea. They always think bonsai is a small tree, which is true, but the reason it's small is because it's given limited space to grow. So you put it in a container that's small so that it can't expand beyond the size of that container.
That's correct. And I think there could be a misconception that people think bonsais are created by cutting the roots, so you make the tree smaller, you know, from the root point of view, but that's actually incorrect. It's about pruning at the top. Mm-hmm. And styling the tree, shaping the tree into a beautiful, miniature, lush version of the actual tree that occurs in nature.
And you can turn a lot of different trees into bonsais, right?
Yes, you can.
So you don't just get a bonsai. It's not a species of tree. You could turn I've seen thorn trees.
Correct. Acacias.
I've seen,
little, what do they call these things? Like a ficus type thing?
So yes, so you can do ficus trees.
That's it.
We did a little bit of a photo shoot with our bonsais yesterday. We have that is a feihi that's made into a bonsai. It's absolutely beautiful.
When I came to see you guys not so long ago, I took a picture of this magnificent tree you have there.
Was it a bougainvillea bonsai? I think.
I don't know, but it is magnificent.
Yes. So
it's gorgeous.
We really do keep a large variety, and at any given time there are so many different ones. We don't have that specific one at the moment, unfortunately, but I'm sure we'll get it again.
That tree that I saw looked like the one from Avatar.
Really?
You know that magic tree from Avatar?
And like the center of yes.
Oh, man, it made me cry. It was so beautiful.
So beautiful. So we have many bonsais. You can get some that are 5 years old. You can get some up to 20 years old, 50 years old, obviously depending on what you want to have. So you can start from small. You can develop it into a really established tree.
Uh-huh.
And the key with bonsais, I know we just mentioned that a bonsai is not where you cut the roots to keep it smaller. It's about pruning the leaves and the branches into the right shape and ideal condition. But the key to actually reviving your bonsai so that it can last for so many years and become such a beautiful established plant is to prune the roots. Once a year, you prune the roots, you cut about one third off the bottom and the sides of the plant,
mm-hmm.
and you refresh the soil and put it back into the pot. So that's just really revitalizing the bonsai so that it can last for such a long time.
Well, because of course it's going to run out of soil and it's going to pull all the nutrients out of that little bit of soil it's got. But that, you'll need a specialist to help you with that, won't you?
No, of course not, Gareth. You can do it yourself. So if you just, of course, if you check your bonsai and all you do is you loosely try and remove it from the pot, you'll see if there are thick roots wrapping themselves around the side. They could even be climbing over the edge of the pot or growing through the drainage holes. That's a key indication that you just need to give the roots a good prune. You only need to cut off about one third, and there are tools that you can get that can cut those roots. They won't be that thick, obviously, because the tree is very small, and you get very good pruning secateurs and scissors specifically for bonsais, and all you do is cut a few of the roots off. You make sure that the feeder roots, good healthy feeder roots, are still there, but the thick roots you remove. You just put fresh bonsai soil. You can buy specific bonsai soil that has all the nutrients that bonsai need, and then you just top up the soil and put the bonsai back in the same pot. Very easy. Anybody can do it.
Yeah.
I see that there's a bonsai tree in Italy that they say is over 1,000 years old.
Yes, I'm not surprised with that.
It's, 1,000 years old, Sia, can you imagine? There's an 800-year-old tree that a guy called Kunio Kobayashi has. Apparently it's a juniper.
Yes, magnificent.
Wow.
But you see, Gareth, that's why two bonsai is a real, you know, form of art. And that's the beauty about bonsaiing, is that you, in your own home, can do it yourself, like you are experiencing now, Gareth.
Wow.
And that you can obviously grow magnificent specimens like that. 1,000 years, you'll need generations to carry on your work. But it's really something that anybody can do. It does take time and effort and care if you really want to get into it, but it's not that difficult. We've put together a very simple guide on our blog, so you can go and read the steps that you need, how to water, the importance of light. But I've also actually put a link there to the website of one of our suppliers, who puts a comprehensive guide how to do the root pruning, what to do after root pruning, how important that is. It also explains on there the different varieties, which ones can survive indoors, which ones shouldn't really be kept indoors, just given their natural, you know, ideal condition in nature. They shouldn't really be indoors, but luckily the wild olive for you, Gareth, will do just fine there.
Okay.
And yeah, so you can just visit our blog.
I suspect you chose an easy one for me.
Yes, it was sort of an intermediate one. There was a more difficult one that I wanted to do, but it's good to start with an easy one so you don't get discouraged. And it is a beautiful one, so I think it's perfect for you. So yeah, you can just visit our blog. blog, you can get a nice, very basic sort of outline of what to do. It's simple, it's easy to follow. And then if you want more comprehensive information and you really want to get into it, then obviously you can find the link on our blog to a bit more information about it. And we also have sales advisors who know so much about bonsais. You can come ask them advice, which one to buy, well, which one will suit you. And
you guys have got a hell of a selection as well. So that's always nice to see.
Yes, exactly. So you can choose the tree you like.
Do yourself a favor this weekend if you're around. And isn't it a long weekend? Monday's a public holiday.
Yes, it is.
Come and visit Lifestyle and go and see their selection of bonsais. It's incredible. Makes me so happy. I must have spent, I don't know, 20 minutes looking at those trees when I was there last time because they are all works of art.
Wow. That's
beautiful.
So true.
And Successful Businessman Weekly suggests that the best thing to have on your successful business table is bonsai.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
It's outdated. The abacus, the swinging balls, and,
yes,
and
balls.
Paperweights.
What publication released this?
See, we haven't got time.
Oh, sorry.
Ben's not here for all day.
I think Ben was making
Pardon
it up.
Me.
Apparently, there's a Japanese white pine bonsai tree that survived Hiroshima. How's
wow.
that? It's 400 years old.
That must
and
be
it
like
survived
400 million. That Yagasaki guy probably bought it.
Well, it actually belongs to the Bonsai and Penjing Museum in Washington.
It must cost a mint, though. If they want to sell that.
Yeah, I mean, wow. These trees go for a lot of money, right? I mean, these very old ones.
The very old ones, yes. And obviously you can understand why, because it takes a lot of work and a lot of heart and soul to grow something into that amazing specimen. But Ben, I must agree with you. I agree about having a bonsai in your workspace.
Yeah.
And we've spoken about how greenery makes you happier, Gareth. You, the one who always said that to us. And you know how it can increase your productivity. And also bonsais just make you so happy. So
yeah, because if you look at trends towards things like designer dogs, people's coffee obsessions and how they have that kind of stuff, it's like take tree form. Like to have a sloppy, leafy tree on your desk. You know, people go, oh, it's a bit
sloppy.
Of greenery. But a bonsai is so beautiful. It's like it was crafted for like an interior design aspect of your life. It's just that amazing.
Absolutely, Ben. I completely
agree. And you get good potting with that as well. You get little stones and you can really like jazz it up to make it look like it's
exactly
like the real deal.
And you know, if you just need a little bit of time out, then you can take some time to prune and look after the leaves and make it look beautiful.
I ignored someone in a meeting the other day because I was busy pruning my bonsai. It was great.
Oh.
I didn't need to have that meeting.
Well, luckily you had your bonsai, Gareth.
Yeah. Thank God to distract me. So Ankia sent me a picture of an apple tree that she's grown from a seed. She says, it's looking great, but I'm not sure if I'll be able to pull it off. What are my chances? Robin, she's asking you. Here's the picture. Have a look here.
You will definitely be able to pull it off.
See how confident Robin is? Just a little picture of an apple tree.
Yes, that apple tree is looking great. And if you've grown it from seed and it's already that big, you are doing a great job. So don't be discouraged. Keep going. I would recommend just getting a little bit of advice on what fertilizer to give it now when you obviously trying to develop those feeder strong roots so that it can grow bigger. And yeah, but good luck. And we definitely have faith. If you need any advice, you can just visit us.
You can also go and check out their blogs because they have a whole lot of information. And in fact, follow them on Facebook and you'll be able to find out even more.
Yes. Thank you, Gareth.
Thank you so much. It's Lifestyle Home and Garden. You can go and visit them. Corner of Oosterhout and Beyers Noordeer. That's in, what's it called? Radfontein?
No, Rand Park Ridge.
Rand Park Ridge. Sorry.
Randburg. Yes.
Very cool.
Dummy. I know how to get there, but I don't know what the place is called. The neighborhood. So there we go. I've got a bonsai. I'm going to keep this alive. I think it's going to become a little bit of an obsession of mine.
I hope so, Gareth. And I'm waiting for those photos.
I'll send them to you. Promise you. All right. Very good. Thank you, Robin. Always nice to see you. We will catch up with Robin next week for more. And if you have a particular thing that you want to know about, she's more than happy to help us figure it out with you. You can email me and I'll forward it to her. Just send it to gareth@cliffcentral.com and we'll make sure that Robin gets all your questions. Thank you, Robin. All right, get Craig Wilkinson in here because he's very excited and I'm very excited too about what we launched just a short while ago. Some people have downloaded the entire series already. It's called Man to Man Talks and it is on cliffcentral.com. It's brought to you by Carling Black Label. They're smart enough to have got involved in a series about something which is a major social issue in South Africa. We've had Craig in here a couple of times before. It's always worth talking to him because he's on the ball when it comes to what is going on in conversations that men are and should be having. He's written a number of books, and he has become something of an authority on these things that men do and don't talk about, the things that we do and we should, and the things that we don't but we should be talking about. He and Khalil Osiris have put together an incredible series, which you can go and download immediately from cliffcentral.com. And it's being downloaded like hotcakes, Craig.
Great.
Yeah, people are loving it. Nice to see you.
Nice to be here. Thanks, Gareth.
How are you?
Very good. Very, very good. Yeah, excited.
Last time I saw you, we were talking about yet another one of your books.
Right.
And you have not stopped. You have not lost a single portion of the energy that you've had for this project from the very beginning. And it seems to me that you're one of the guys who's hitting home, because a lot of men are suddenly picking up the conversation that you're dropping and running it in their own little communities. They're creating networks with other guys. It's really having a tremendous impact. You must be very pleased to see that.
Very happy. That's what's so needed, isn't it? I mean, there's such a demonization of men over the last while, and I think
some
to be
of it's deserved.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
You know, and we've discussed this in the one episode you invited me to be a part of. But you've had some incredible discussions.
Yeah.
So I wanted to have Khalil here as well, but he's back in the US.
He's back in the US. Yeah.
And he comes out here fairly regularly.
He does.
You guys will see him again, and then we'll hopefully get him and you into the studio.
Great.
But tell us about the inspiration behind Man to Man Talks.
Well, it's a long story, but I mean, you know, I'm very passionate about fatherhood, and South Africa's really got a major, major fatherless issue. In fact, the world's got a major father. I mean, UNICEF, we've had this discussion, cited absent fathers as the single biggest social issue in the world. So, you know, and having been a single dad for a while and, you know, raising kids for about 7 years as a single dad, you just begin to realize how critically urgent this thing is. And then with the whole gender-based violence thing, that's the latest one. I bought a copy of that, which is such a big issue in South Africa, men going wrong. And then looking at this juxtaposition, you know, the fact that true masculinity is such a beautiful gift to the world. It really is, as is true femininity. I mean, the co-creation of masculine and feminine working together to build a great world.
Yin and yang, right?
Yin and yang. But when it goes wrong, it goes horribly wrong. So how do we call out the good in men? And how do we call out the bad? And how do we inspire and motivate and equip men to be exactly what they were designed to be, and cut off the nonsense, and unpack these issues? You see, I don't know if you saw the stat recently in the UK, the leading killer of men under 50 in the UK is now suicide.
Really?
Yeah. It's a huge, huge issue.
And that's obviously because there are all these men with all these unresolved issues.
Completely.
Going about their lives in the wrong way.
Baggage from the past, but then the whole issue is big boys don't cry, so we don't talk about it, you know. I mean, guys get together, how are you doing? I'm doing great, you know, slap on the back, you know, watch a bit of sport. I mean, a guy can be surrounded by men watching soccer, watching rugby, whatever, and dying inside. But there's all this jubilation and going, you know, no one's talking about this stuff. So the conversation is crucial.
Well, if you think about it, and I've discussed this with you a couple of times, every single male ancestor of mine, going back as far as I can tell, has been at war for a country, a king, a religion, a thing. I'm the first generation in my family's recorded history to not have to go and fight for some bullshit.
Right.
And I sometimes feel, well, does it make me less of a man?
Mm. But Gareth,
you know, I think about like this attachment that masculinity has to violence, to aggression, to competition, to battle, to ownership, to territory, to power. And I think maybe I'm actually really relieved that that's not the legacy I have to perpetuate.
But, you know, you fight a cause too, you know, the cause of truth. I mean, you're on a quest to find out what you're...
God. Oh,
yeah, really, it's true.
Really?
Absolutely.
Me? No. I'm a terrible warrior for that.
No, but you, I mean, look, every man, I think, has a desire for a battle to fight. And the point is, it doesn't have to be a physical battle.
Okay.
It's
talk
a
to
cause.
Me about it.
Well, you know, I mean, look at the movies men have made famous. They all have kind of three themes, don't they? They have a battle to fight. There's something wrong that we need to rectify. There's a comet plummeting towards the earth and we got to divert it.
Yeah.
There's a Dr. No, Mr. Evil, whatever. You know, there's something innate in a man's psyche that I want to fight against something. And, you know, if you're fighting against what's wrong and standing for what's right, using that desire, We wouldn't need a police force in this world. If every man used his strength to fight against what's wrong and stand for what's right. There's also this desire for adventure to live. You know, there's this desire, you know, a common theme in the movies too is the car chase and the mayhem and the craziness. You know, we've got that thing. You know, a bunch of guys around a braai don't talk about relationships, do we? We talk about, you know, we talk about how, a bull jumped out of a field and chased you down the road and how funny it is. You know, we talk about adventure and kind of stuff. And that's also beautiful.
And we like adrenaline. We like competition.
We love it. But, you know, if we use it well, it's beautiful. Imagine if every man used that desire for adventure to build a better life, to you know, father children that are not just his own, to mentor other children, you know. And finally, the quest for beauty. You know, I mean, you bring a beautiful woman to a room and guys go gaga. Because so it's a battle, adventure, and beauty. But if you use those things well.
Men have been the patrons of the arts for all of history.
Absolutely.
Men paid for the Mona Lisa to be painted and for the David to be sculpted out of marble and for the Sistine Chapel to be painted and for every other major work of art to have been constructed, because men have an appreciation for beauty just like women do.
Absolutely.
So we have some more delicate and urbane tastes to us, but where does it all go wrong? Like, this is what you try to address in these talks. I mean, where does it all go wrong? Where does it get messed up? Where do men become derailed?
That, you know, I always say to guys, you know, no man is born an abuser or a misogynist. No man is born that way. You know, something goes wrong in the journey. You know, the whole nature nurture thing. So inherent in the biology of man are these things we're talking about. But he needs an older man to help him find the way.
And like a bull elephant.
I love that story. Yeah, the bull elephant. Exactly. You know, and there are questions that a boy asks that a mom cannot answer.
Okay, now, before we get into an argument here, because there's going to be a lot of feminists who'll come rushing at you with their nails and teeth bared. If you are a single mother, this is no poor reflection on you. This is not you being inadequate. There are just certain things that a boy can only get from a male role model.
Absolutely. I mean, look, I think the heroines of this nation, I mean, you saw the stats recently, 61% of kids are registered without the father's name. So, I mean, single moms are absolute heroines in our country, and they're doing a phenomenal and sterling job. The thing is, it's not a single mom's fault that she's a single mom, is it, in the first place? No. It's not what she chose and desired. So she's making the absolute best with what she's got. But their questions, and this is going back to this beautiful, you called it yin-yang, but the co-creation, the masculine and the feminine. You think about a child is born because of the dance between a man and a woman. You know, if you can call it that. And the world continues to operate like that. So the questions a young boy asks, I mean, the primary role model of every child is their same gender parent. Mm-hmm. You know, a man can model to his daughter beautiful qualities. A woman can model to her son qualities of hard work and compassion, all kinds of beautiful things. But the primary role model in terms of, you know, show me how to be a man, a boy looks to his dad. And if the dad is absent, or the dad is stuck in a bottle or stuck behind a cell phone or in a different city or just there but not there, he's not going to answer those questions. And the question that a boy asks, you know, because we want to fight a battle, we want to win the heart of the beauty, we want to live this adventure, build a great life, the primary question in our heart is do I have what it takes to do this? And so the father needs to validate his son and say, son, you've got what it takes. You can do this. And then model to him how to use his strength well, how to harness that desire for battle in such a way that it's going to be for good.
I know you address a lot of these things in the podcast series, and I can't tell enough people to listen and download it, particularly in our country. But what are the direct consequences of not having that male role model?
Well, the first one is what we would do as a male is we'd look, where do we look to for the answers? So we'd look to media, we look to our peers, we look to perhaps the dad that's going wrong himself. You know, so the consequences is what's modeled to us is often wrong. You know, in many areas, for instance, you take Cape Town, the Cape Flats, in many areas, gangsters are revered as the role models in the community. Yeah. So they look to that, and the young elephant follows that, and that's the example they get. But essentially, a man grows up fairly wounded in the sense that he feels inadequate. He feels as though, I'm asking this question, am I enough? My dad's been absent, he hasn't validated me, he hasn't imparted the sense of masculinity to me. So I do one of two things. I either withdraw into all kinds of addictions. Well, you know, I don't step up to the plate, so I feel inadequate. So I find many different ways to prove, to find solace.
You become the loser you think you are.
Exactly. Yes, I believe it, and therefore I don't step up. Therefore, I have a kid, and I don't step up to the plate and be the father. Or I spend my whole life trying to prove that I am the man, and that's very dangerous because what
you act out.
You act out. So you know, I mean, if you look at the stats, it's fascinating. You know, after a Premier League soccer match, domestic violence spikes. Why is that? Because a guy puts his value in the team that he supports. He comes home feeling less of a man. Yep. He feels like he needs to beat up his wife to feel. So men use their strength badly to try and prove that they're a man. Rape is a power.
This is something we've spoken about in sport.
This numerous occasions, yeah.
What do you call it? You've got a term for it.
Well, Richard Holland, I think, formalized this phrase initially by saying you're outsourcing your masculinity.
Right. That's vicariously. Yeah. You're living through your team.
Yep.
And a lot of guys do that because they're feeling inadequate.
Very much so. Right? It becomes a group identity.
It's not healthy.
It's not healthy at all.
It's not healthy. While supporting a sports team's fine and very healthy.
And
probably, you know, it's like supporting your team in battle. And that's kind of where it comes from, right?
Yeah.
You rally behind your comrades. Yeah. This is not a healthy thing if you're a broken man and that's all you've got.
Well, if your identity is in it and your validity is in it, that's the problem. You know, I mean, you can feel fantastic when your team wins, but if it devastates you when they lose, then perhaps it's gone a bit too far because you're identifying your masculinity in them and your value in them.
What kinds of relationships do men who didn't have a good male role model have?
It's a great question. Look, there's a thing called alexithymia. I don't know if it's a strange word, but it really means emotional illiteracy. It means a man who's completely out of touch with feelings, incapable of empathy, understanding his own feelings. So often a man who's been brought up in that sense is emotionally unavailable and emotionally often illiterate. So he's just he's incapable of engaging in a deep, intimate relationship with a woman.
Alexithymia.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's a good word.
The personality construct characterized by the subclinical inability to identify and describe emotions in the self.
Right.
The core characteristics are marked dysfunction in emotional awareness, social attachment, and interpersonal relating. I know lots of people who suffer from this. No, I'm going to laugh at them quietly, but I wouldn't laugh to their
faces.
It's
a tragedy. That's a tragedy.
They're a disaster.
It's sad. And, you know, and it's a consequence of their upbringing because we're taught, big boys don't cry. You know, and if you as a boy bring your heart to your father for validation, he's not there. Yeah, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to tuck your heart away in a very sort of secret place and be incapable of bringing it out when you need to.
Sure. All right. So what kinds of, I mean, doesn't this put women off to be around men like this?
Of course it
does. Men that are needy and pathetic?
Well, it's not just needy and pathetic because they might be very aggressive and closed off. The point is they can't, they'll run a mile when an emotional conversation comes up. I mean, other ways it plays out is men can have an absolute need to dominate, never be wrong. Can't say I'm sorry. I can't apologize. I've got to be right. I've got to control the relationship. I've got to control the purse strings. You know, so there's this need to control, and that's just an inadequacy. I mean, if the one thing that men desire from women more than sex, interestingly enough, is respect. Men want respect.
Is this why when you hear rappers dissing each other or complaining that they didn't get enough respect?
Yeah.
This is this is our primal animal.
It's a big primal thing, and it's a beautiful thing. You see, a lot of men don't deserve respect. That's the thing. So, but a woman needs to understand that, you know, you disrespect the man, even if he doesn't, it's a dangerous territory. It's just an understanding of a man. So, men demand respect, you know, men that are deeply wounded. If they don't get it, they react either in a violent way. And a lot of men just withdraw into all kinds of addictions. You know, pornography is a major, major addiction across the world now. Why? Men are just withdrawing into that because it's not a real world. It's a world where I feel better and I feel like a man. I can click on a button and this woman does whatever I wanted to do. You know, it makes me feel good. The dopamine hit, et cetera, et cetera. Alcohol is another thing. Workaholism is another thing. You know, so men withdraw into all these addictions. They have
alexithymia. You said workaholics are... Is that another kind of addiction?
It is. Of course it is. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's an addiction.
We're led to believe a workaholic is a positive thing.
Well, a lot of addictions are socially accepted and socially mandated virtually. You know, workaholism in our society is one of those.
Alcoholism in South Africa. Yeah, it's a big thing. Yeah. Men drink. That's what they do together.
And you almost can't go out and have a good evening out without a good couple of drinks. You know, why? Because it's
how guys socialize.
It's how we are. Yeah. And I mean, the need to always have a posture and a pose, Gareth. You've seen that with a bunch of guys. You know, you get a bunch of fathers together on the side of a soccer pitch. I mean, they're all the experts, the coaches. They know, you know, the posturing and is
their kid can do no wrong. Exactly, the coach is always wrong. Yeah. They're the best one to advise everybody.
Yeah.
Me. Ego.
It's all about that. And it's a wounded ego. You know, an ego that's not wounded can be a beautiful thing. You know, I heard a great definition of humility. The humility is simply the willingness to be known fully for who you are. So if you're brilliant at something, it's not humble to diss your brilliance in that thing. It's humble to say, you know, I'm really grateful that I'm brilliant at this and I'm going to be that fully. But if you're not good at something, you're also honest about that. You don't have to be what you're not, but you can be who you are. You know, that's authentic masculinity.
So also admit your failings and weaknesses.
Exactly. Look in the mirror and
be comfortable with them.
Absolutely. 100%.
You know, accept that you can't be everything to everyone.
100%.
Nobody's perfect.
And embrace it and be happy. And you see, that's where teamwork's brilliant. You know, if I'm great at something and you're not so great, you need me. And if you're great at something and I, you know, vice versa, we need each other. And that's the beauty of a team, you know, where you recognize I'm great at something and bring that to the party. You know, I need Sia because he can bring this. You know, it creates a beautiful harmony amongst people. But when men have to do it all, it creates this huge conflict situation, doesn't it? Because of egos.
Well, I mean, we've got such a social problem in South Africa with this. And, you know, I always say it in a glib way, and I certainly don't mean to, but the quietest day in South Africa is Father's Day on social media.
Because it's tragic, but it's true.
People are looking inward and they're seeing a big gap in their lives, and that's because these men have let them down.
Yeah, absolutely.
These men have let these kids down. There's this cycle that it perpetuates through generations
of
fathers not being there. Mm. And it goes across the board in South Africa. Very white, black, old, young, rich, poor.
100%.
There are bad fathers in every one of those categories.
Absolutely. Bad, absent, there but not there, or not there at all.
Is fatherhood that hard?
No, it's not. You know, Gareth, the problem is this.
How come so many people can't get it right if it's so hard, if the failure rate's so high?
Well, two reasons. One is we've not often had good fatherhood modeled to us. And number two, we're dealing with our own stuff. You know, inside each of us as men, there's a boy as well, isn't there? And often the boy is wounded. So fatherhood, true fatherhood, is this parallel journey. It's being and becoming a whole man, because we only can give what we've got to give. You know, I mean, if you have prejudice, you're going to impart prejudice to your kids, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And if you've got love and joy and peace, you're going to give that over to them. If you have a deep sense of self-worth, you're going to impart that. You know, so this whole journey, and this is what a lot of books don't talk about. They talk about fathering techniques, but they don't talk about the fact that get your life right, man, first, because out of your life, you're going to father. And even if your techniques are not 100%, if your life's good and growing and honest and authentic, and, you know, you're going to give greatness to your kids.
Okay, but the way you've just explained it, it sometimes seems to me that it's a cycle that can't be broken. The bad example of fatherhood comes from your father, who got it from his father. There's just this ugliness that's handed down generation after generation. Is it possible to break that cycle?
It's difficult, but it's absolutely 100% possible. I mean, this is the thing about choice, isn't it? I mean, every single man has the ability to break the cycle. You know, we seek out role models. There are role models in books, even if you don't have them, you know, reading about great men who do great things and share, you know, there are role models on radio. You know, find the role models, find the men, research the stuff and make a decision to say, you know, I had crap handed to me from my previous generations and I'm not going to hand that on to my next kid. Most far, this is the tendency. You either overcompensate in your fatherhood or you perpetuate. And the key is,
what's the price of overcompensation?
Because
we know what the price of perpetuation is.
Yeah. I mean, it depends what you're overcompensating for. I mean, if you had a very disciplinarian father and you become completely laissez-faire, your kids have no boundaries, you know. If you had the opposite and you become, you know, so it depends on what you're overcompensating to do.
Uh-huh.
But the key is to find that balance where you say, what does my child need? And you know, this is the challenge, Gareth, and this is why it's so hard, is we're actually refathering ourselves. We got to refather ourselves through the various, you know, peers and books and stuff we have as we father our children and find that balance. And that's the challenge.
All right. What about this? And I'm loath to say it because it's controversial stuff, but this idea of the feminization of men, that men are now expected to talk about their feelings and things that they're probably genetically not predisposed to do. You know, it's not normal for men to sit around a campfire and sing songs with each other and do what women would do in the old days. Talk about how they feel, discuss relationships, gossip about the other men. That's not really how guys are. We laugh, we punch each other, we joke around. It seems to me that there's this intent by modern society to make men more like women in the hopes that it will take away the ugly parts of men's characters. Do you know what I mean?
Am I articulating it properly? No, you are. I mean, it's a very, very major issue. I think it's both good and bad. I think if you try and, you see, this is what happens with naturally what a mom will do to a son is try and model to him the qualities she thinks a human being should have. And those would be feminine qualities. So compassion and love and care, which are fantastic qualities. And a man needs those. But what a man also needs is the wild side to fight the battle, to live the adventure. So if you try and make a man into a woman, you're going to destroy a man. But if you try and make a man a whole man, wherein lies the ability to nurture, love, actually have compassionate conversations. It's not mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So you make a, you empower a man to be a man, but you equip a man to be emotionally literate, both within himself and in, interpersonal. That's EQ. I mean, EQ is the ability to know and understand and manage myself, and also know and understand and with empathy manage interpersonal relationships. So they're not mutually exclusive. I mean, so one guy did a beautiful thing about the four faces of man, that a man needs to have the face of a king, you know, when he's in his realm and he's, you know, running his business, he needs to rule over that. The king, but the lover, the warrior. There's a time when a man needs to just put on his game face and fight through crap, whatever.
Sure.
And the friend. And, you know, if you look at the friend and the lover, in that is nurturing and intimacy and vulnerability, etc. But there's also, you don't lose the king, you don't lose the warrior, because if you do that, society falls apart. So it's a, it, you know, we cannot make men into women. Men and women are different. There are biological drivers that make us different. I mean, a lot of the very ardent feminists argue that it's a, that the gender thing is just a social construct, which I completely disagree with at all.
No, well, it's biological.
Not, it's biological.
It's biological. There's stuff that we inherit genetically and in our biology and in our hormones and in the things that make us men or women that are not socially constructed.
100%
That
right.
We can prove over and over again. I mean, like men doing, you know, engineering, for example. They've got this major drive all over the world to get women to do engineering, and it's not working. It doesn't work.
Well, you know what's
there are women engineers, and they're terrific, but they are an exception to the rule. It's just like there are male nurses, but they're an exception to the rule.
Very much so. Well, Scandinavia bears that out. You know, Scandinavia is probably the society that is the most egalitarian in terms of that. I mean, they've tried to remove all social constructs and social barriers. But if you look at exactly those two professions, engineers,
they're more unequal.
They're more unequal. So what's actually happened, the social constructionists are actually in many ways been proved wrong, because the more you remove social constructs, the more the natural tendency of men and women coming out. Is, and it's a beautiful thing.
Is there a, like the you mentioned the extreme feminists. Are there extreme masculinists?
Oh, they definitely are. Yeah.
Who are they? What do they believe?
Well, they believe, you see, I mean, in this little booklet that I've written about why gender-based violence happens, the second.
This is called No Excuse for Abuse. You've just published this. Are they available?
They are available, yes, yes.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a second.
The first reason why men abuse is they're wounded and damaged. The second reason men abuse is they have a false concept of what it means to be a man. So if you believe that men must be dominant and
let's just be clear, those are the only two reasons that men would.
No,
there are others.
Yeah, there are others. Yeah. Okay. So I list four.
All right.
The third one is a misconception about women in the sense that the belief that women are less than. That false belief.
Okay.
And the fourth one is, and of course, is emasculating circumstances.
Yes.
So in South Africa, we have a perfect storm. We have wounded men who weren't fathered, didn't, you know, we have false concepts about what it means to be man. I'm going to be macho and dominant. We have false ideas about women. Women are less than if they're not subservient to me. And then we have emasculating circumstances, unemployment and all kinds of psychological
where the
stuff.
Man feels like he can't provide, so he's a loser.
All that kind of stuff, yes. I mean, if you have all of those four, you've got a perfect storm, and therefore South Africa has one of the worst GBV problems in the world.
I often think that that this extreme masculinity in terms of like feminist, the opposite to that, the masculinist is just also a poisonous ideology.
Absolutely,
it's a
poisonous.
Bad idea.
It absolutely is.
That's where you get that very patriarchal, very patronizing.
Very much so.
All the bad pets.
But you know, you think of power. Power is a beautiful thing. But power is often, power is always involved in abuse, but power is also always involved in creating society.
And in rectifying injustice.
100%.
Because without power and authority, how do you fix injustice?
Exactly.
Who are you going to listen to? Who's going to implement? Who's going to execute that justice?
You need it. You need it. So, I mean, the thing with power is there to love, serve, protect, essentially, isn't it? So political power is there to serve your constituents. You know, economic power is there to serve the next generation, your family, your loved ones, etc. Physical power is there to serve, love, to protect. You know, so if, so true masculinity is using your strength well. Essentially, if you had to put it in a nutshell, what do you do with your strength? You've got strength. What do you do with it? You've got a desire to fight a battle. What kind of battle are you going to fight? What do you do with your strength? Do you use it to love, provide, serve, protect? Fantastic. You're getting it right.
I admire what you're doing. Are we making any headway?
Jeez, Gareth, yes and no. I mean, look, we're living in a very broken society, aren't we? I mean, our history also has broken many men. I mean, you talked about the transgenerational thing. I mean, you can't fix generational pain in one generation. And sometimes it never gets fixed, but you can begin to turn the tide. What I'm seeing now is a lot of men. It's the champion men that are quiet. I mean, I think we've had this conversation too. You know, unfortunately, the fools and the idiots get the biggest airtime and they make the biggest impact. But so many men that are just good men, going to work every day, providing for their families, loving their daughters, are not being publicized, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm seeing more and more of those men beginning to stand up and say, you know what? But you see, that was my complaint about things like the hashtag men are trash. Of course, there's a reason to highlight and bring out where men are screwing up monumentally. But what's more important is to empower and equip good men to become better men and raise our boys who are growing up looking to see what it means to be a man. Where are the examples, you know, to show them what it means to be a good man. And if we can really inspire that and begin to get an army and mobilize these good men, I think we can begin to turn the tide. You see, I mean, the problem is men. The solution needs to be men. Women can't fix men. Mm-hmm. And a lot of broken men, you asked me about relationships, a lot of broken men bring the question that was unanswered by their father to a woman. So if you're able to bed a woman, you feel like a man. But the problem is it can't fix the wound in your heart. So the problem is it's like a drug, you then have to bed another woman and another and another. And so a broken man in a relationship, whether he's abusive or just a player, is constantly looking for affirmation and he's never going to find it in a woman. He needs to find it in and of himself and have that whole thing restored.
Sure. You've done so much work in this. Where can we get the No Excuse for Abuse book?
This was actually sponsored by the No Excuse, which is a Carling
initiative. Carling Black Label. They're the same guys who are sponsoring the podcast.
Absolutely, yeah. So they've sponsored a whole bunch.
How did they get involved, just by the way? Because people would go, oh, well, you know, it's an alcohol. Like, what's their involvement? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, Carling's always had this thing about champion men. So they're very strong in the whole alcohol. And this is a very interesting conversation. I mean, Gareth, you and I could get blind drunk. There's no way we're going to beat up a woman. No matter.
There's no way we'll even beat up each other.
No,
I think you'd win if I challenged you.
But the point is, we wouldn't do it, would we? It's not us.
No, I think you get people who are they have a personality problem, and all that alcohol or drugs or pretty women or anything else are is they're enabling.
100% right.
Things that you know, I mean, I've had a lot of drinks in my life. I've never been violent, ever. No,
likewise. It's just not in us. So Carling's all about let's create champion men who use their strength well, men who know how to drink but not drink irresponsibly, not overdo it. I mean, a guy who constantly getting drunk, what is he trying to hide from? You know, there's a problem there. There's an issue there.
But if you're having drinks with the boys, it's fun.
It's absolutely. Sure. Nothing that's wrong with it. That's what we like 100%, to do. 100%, yeah. Sure. So that's the angle. And it just so happened that their brand – architect was exactly the same as the Father of Nation.
That's fantastic. I've got to credit them. I mean, we don't talk too much about the sponsor in a situation like this because they wanted to be involved with the content you're creating. But I've got to say, it takes bravery.
Yeah.
It takes a huge amount of confidence in your brand to back something like this because there are some hard conversations that need to be had.
There are.
And there are loads of people who do all kinds of CSI initiatives because it looks good and the company gets credit for it, but they're not doing anything to really change society. Yeah. This is changing things. People are downloading this podcast series. Go and take a listen to it. It's called Man to Man Talks. It's on cliffcentral.com. And we're going to have Khalil in here one day too with you. You two make a great team. I hope that you find more and more men to rally to this cause because it is, once it gets to a certain critical mass, it's unstoppable. And this is the best way to fix a broken society.
Fantastic. Absolutely. Thank you, Gareth.
Yeah, no, well done. Yeah. I mean, Craig, you've done incredible stuff. Craig has also got some other books. We'll put all the info up on cliffcentral.com and you can go and find it anytime you would go and look for podcasts and download that series. You won't be sorry. Very good.
Awesome. Thanks,
man. Good to see you. Craig Wilkinson, everybody. Coming up in a little while, we're going to talk to our guest for this morning. I'm very excited to have her here. She is Marishan has been she's been on the scene for a long, long time. She's actually about to perform in a show to the great music legends we've lost before their time. And it's going to be at the Lyric at Gold Reef City. And she'll be starring alongside Timothy Malloy, Joseph Clark, who you met yesterday, Eddie Clayton, and lots of other cool people. Of course, she was in Jamali. Yeah, Jamali all those years ago. She was the first one to leave. So we're going to get to that in a short while. I've also got a song of hers that I'll play for you just to get you in the mood. And we'll catch up with Marishan in a moment or two. CliffCentral.com.